RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Ford, and this episode of the podcast is presented by DraftKings. We're going to tell you about the offer DraftKings has for the MMA Report podcast or listener later on in the show. Of course, we have got a jam-packed show for you this week. We'll take a brief look back at what happened last Saturday at UFC Vegas, number 18, headlined by Alexander Volkov defeating Alistair Overeem. Also, we'll talk about Corey Sandhagen with that devastating fine knee knockout in 28 seconds against Frankie Edgar. We'll talk about the news on Tuesday from Bellator MMA. Not really earth-shattering news that Bellator is going to Showtime, but we'll talk about some of the fight bookings, and I want to give a lot of praise to Bellator for making a right fight booking in terms of this light heavyweight tournament that they are going to do. And then finally, we are going to preview Saturday's UFC 258, of course, headlined by Kamaru Usman defending the UFC welterweight title against Gilbert Burns. It is it's here early on a Wednesday morning. Typically, myself and Daniel aren't recording this early, but Daniel, how you doing, bro?
Man, I'm doing all right, but I know you're doing great. We've been doing this podcast for a very, very, very long time, and this is the first time we've ever recorded a podcast where I'm talking to you, and you are talking to us here the week after watching the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win the Super Bowl. I know they won the Super Bowl, this century, but this is the first time they've won it with us doing the podcast together, and of course, you know, you being a part of the broadcast team there for them. So I wanted to offer you a congratulations, and as someone who's never seen any of his teams win a championship, how does it feel, Jason? And I know you're spoiled, you Tampa Bay resident, but how does it feel to watch the GOAT do GOAT things?
I tell you, bro, it's still so surreal. I mean, I've been working for Bucks Radio since 2004, and there was definitely a moment I had in pregame where I was just kind of like standing there in our booth, and I'm like, "Holy crap! It's like we are actually here." You know, it's been a long journey to get here, but man, that was. I mean, look, you talk about it, and you know this being in broadcasting. There's events that you get to be at that just you'll never forget. You know, and prior to this, to me, it was watching the Tampa Bay Lightning win the Stanley Cup in 2004 in a game seven here at home. And now to be a part of this, and obviously it's different for me with, you know, being a part of the team radio broadcast. It's it was an unbelievable night, unbelievable game, man. Just, Todd Bowles, what he was able to do. And man, that was just, you know, it's one of those things that I'll never forget everything that happened the last 2 weeks. I mean, there was a lot of work that went into making our broadcast happen, but man, it was just it's surreal for me. It's funny, is it was like the fourth quarter, I had friends texting me like, "Oh man, we're world champs, you know, congrats, all this." I'm like, "Game ain't over yet, fellas. Until those clock that clock says 000, the game's not over yet." But there was definitely some turning points in that game. You know, I thought there was three big turning points. One was scoring there at the end of the first half. And then I thought the second turning point was answering the field goal that the Chiefs got at the start of the third quarter. And then really, I thought the other big turning point was in the third quarter when we had a snap go over TB's head, you know, and then we attempted a 52-yard field goal. If you don't make that, the Chiefs got the ball on the 42-yard line. So, man, it was an unbelievable night. And to share that with my crew that we've all been together for such a long time, it was an amazing night for me.
Yeah, man, I am so jealous. I am so jealous, man. You literally won a championship with the GOAT, and just an amazing cast of characters on your team this year, between from the head coach and obviously the coordinators you're so proud to have on your team, but to have Gronkowski in the building along with Tom Brady, and I think one of the best parts of people part of your team winning that Super Bowl has to be Levante David, who's just been an absolute grinder for the Buccaneers since y'all drafted him. He's been one of the best defensive players in the league, and he's just been grinding every day, bringing his lunch pail to work. And a lot of times you'll see, you know, great defensive players you know, never get rewarded, and they never get that championship success, and so maybe they don't get recognized, and because we're always paying attention to who's under center. But Levante, man, I mean, he has just been a defensive stud for so many years. So he was the one guy where I was like, I'm glad he got himself a championship ring. So yeah, man, you know, I feel like you're one of the few people in America that enjoyed every snap of that game. Like I know people, some people were rooting for Tampa, but the game itself wasn't the most exciting. All of us at our Super Bowl parties, you know, our very small Super Bowl parties that really were just our family in the household, we were forced to like talk to our families instead of watching the game. So, yeah, I mean, realistically from the get go, it was a very boring game from the opening drives where no one scored to the, you know, Tampa Bay getting that early lead. The game itself was boring, but at the end of the day, there is something really cool as just a casual NFL fan or a hardcore NFL fan to watch Tom Brady win. And I know a big part of y'all winning was the defense, but to watch, you know, the greatest winner in football history do it again, there's something cool about that idea that you're watching history right before your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, you're spot on. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. That game was great. At least in my eyes, it's definitely, look, it's a night that I'm not going to ever forget. It's been a celebration here in the Floyd household since Sunday. You know, I was partying kind of late on Sunday night. And, actually after we do this podcast, I'm going to the Victory Boat Parade. So, yeah, looking forward to it. But we are here to talk about what's going on in the world of mixed martial arts. And let's just kind of briefly start off by going back to last Saturday night, UFC Vegas number 18. You know, obviously great performance by Alexander Volkov in the main event, just a one-sided fight. I think you see when Volkov doesn't have to defend takedown attempts of how good he can be. I just thought an excellent performance by him. You know, we'll see what happens to Alistair Overeem. I do kind of, part of me wonders, you know, with the amount of fighters we're seeing axed from the UFC roster, and you look at the financial component, that makes me kind of wonder, you know, even though, yes, he is, you know, 4-2 now in his last six fights, I do wonder, you know, potentially could the UFC part ways with him? But man, Volkov, I mean, over the next month, as we're going to see kind of how this heavyweight division plays out. Of course, you got Rozenstruik and Gagne coming up, Blades and Lewis. And then of course, the title fight in March with Stipe and Ngannou. But man, what a great performance by Volkov. Corey Sandhagen, good God, man, what a beautifully timed knee, devastating knockout. You know, at 39 years old, I really wonder what's next for Frankie Edgar. I wonder if there's people potentially, you know, his family, his inner circle that are maybe saying to him, hey Frankie, you know, why go out there and compete? Because the odds of him ever getting back to a UFC title shot, you know, you never say never, but I mean, look, it's probably less than 20% chance there. But my guess is that probably Frankie wants to just go out there for the love of the game. But, you know, to me, this past Saturday night was all about Volkov and Sandhagen.
Yeah, those were the two big headlines. When you have your main event and your co-main event go out there and get finishes like that, Jason, that's the big story. And obviously, I think the biggest story was the co-main event. Just because anytime you get a flying knee knockout, I mean, it's the story of the day. It's going to be on SportsCenter, and it's going to be replay time. And again, you're going to see it subconsciously in your sleep because you've seen it all day on Twitter. And Corey Sandhagen, man, is really building himself up as a guy who, without a shadow of a doubt, at some point in time, we're going to see him in a fight where it's for a championship, right? At 135, Corey, you know, obviously had that rough loss to Aljo, but since then, to respond with finishes over Marlon Moraes, fly me KO over Frankie Edgar. I mean, Sandhagen's going to at some point challenge for the bantamweight title. Not sure when. This is a division where there's a lot of dance partners that want to dance with the champion. But Corey Sandhagen is just continuing to elevate his game after his toughest loss. A lot of times in the sport, we'll see guys get to a really high point, falter, and never return. Sandhagen's returned and even higher. So that was a great co-main event. And then, of course, the main event, you know, Volkov went up there against a former K-1 Grand Prix champion. And Alexander Volkov was very much clearly the better striker. I think what you can take away from this heavyweight fight is this: Alexander Volkov's striking technically is continuing to differentiate itself from the rest of the heavyweight division. For Volkov, he's got to feel confident about his technique going up against most of the heavyweights. The big concern, though, is there are a lot of heavy hitters at heavyweight. So even if Volkov may be outpointing Francis Ngannou, Francis has two sledgehammers in his hands. So that may be the great equalizer. I know the equalizer aired on CBS after the Super Bowl. But Volkov against Overeem, my thought process watching that fight was Alexander's continued to have a very special stand-up game, and he controlled the stand-up over Overeem, which is very hard to do. In terms of the future of those guys that lost for Edgar, a retirement would make sense unless, like you mentioned, he just wants to keep on going at it. And then I would start looking at matching him up in fights against fellow legends. Those fights would intrigue me very much. Maybe once he gets a little bit of steam with a win over a legend, you can set him up with a younger bantamweight to get the younger bantamweight over. And for Alistair Overeem, I would put him on that similar trajectory. But if I had to bet, he does seem like someone they would let go of. And I think he's someone who still has real value to someone like Scott Coker.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on there. I will tell you my biggest surprise of the night, and what I mean by surprise is I just did not expect this. And to me, it's Clay Guida. You know, when you think of Michael Johnson, you think of the fast hands that he has, and I just didn't think that Clay Guida could compete with that speed. And by golly, he competed. With great performance by Clay Guida, 30-27 across the board. Michael Johnson, you got to imagine his days in the UFC will now be over after the run he has been on. But man, Clay, and I like what he said in his post-fight interview where he's like, look, you know, I want to fight these young up-and-coming guys. I think there's probably a reason the UFC doesn't want to do that because they know that Clay could potentially derail a little bit of a prospect hype train. But to me, the biggest surprise of the night has to be how Clay Guida was able to get it done against Michael Johnson with the hands.
Yeah, with the hands, and he's just grabbing the hands of time and forcing him to go backwards. I dug this man. If there was one veteran who I would love to see make one last run, it would definitely be Clay Guida. I mean, he's been a part of our lives for such a long time. He's given us some great fight of the years throughout time, and of course, he's had a couple duds when he decided to go clinch on us. There was a time period where he was boring, where he would just go for clinch work for some reason. But, man, if Clay Guida makes a late run in his career, I would be so happy. And, that was a great performance that I didn't see coming against Michael Johnson. You know, outside of that, there wasn't a whole lot that surprised me. But in terms of what was notable, I mean, that Benil Dariush, Carlos Diego Ferreira fight was really, really good. It was an entertaining fight, and I thought it was clearly the best fight of the night. And it was a fight where Carlos did lose to Dariush, but those are two of the best lightweights on the roster, and it was a close decision that could have gone either way. So I thought both guys, you know, could feel confident about their showing there. And then lastly, Alexander Pantoja welcomed Manel Cape to the UFC. I think Manel's biggest struggle has to be maybe the fact that there's some regret that he wasn't more aggressive earlier, as he showed in the last part of the fight. That there was a lot of success there with the aggression, but otherwise Pantoja welcomed him to the UFC with an incredible performance, and Pantoja continues to be a top flyweight who, much like Sanhagen, you got to envision at some point he'll get that championship opportunity.
Yeah, I'll mention about the Dariush and Diego fight. I don't know why one of the judges gave two rounds to Carlos. I thought that was a clear 2-1 for Benil Dariush. Danilo Marquez, who was one of the bigger underdogs on the card, goes out and submits Mike Rodriguez. You know, wouldn't be surprised if that potentially ends the UFC run for Mike Rodriguez. Devontae Smith comes back, and ends up getting a doctor stoppage there in the second round. A clear doctor stoppage fight, should have been stopped. Probably a broken orbital there for Justin James. And also, I want to mention about the main event. Really like the stoppage by Jason Herzog.
Yeah, it was a good stoppage, man. Herzog did a phenomenal job there. And again, I think if we're doing a power ranking, sort of best referees in the sport, I think Jason Herzog is my number one. And, obviously people make mistakes, and I'm sure I just jinxed him for his next fight. But, I thought Herzog had a nice stoppage there. And You know, speaking of stoppages, I mean, the preliminary card wasn't filled with many, but the very first fight, Ode Osborne, man, woof, he was dynamite with his knockout over Jerome Rivera. It's a nice day in the office when you only have to work for about 26 seconds to get your paycheck, and that's what Osborne had to do against Jerome.
Yeah, that was a great performance. Of course, that was initially supposed to be the flyweight debut for Ode Osborne. Initially was supposed to take on Malcolm Gordon, and then he had another opponent. That opponent didn't make it to the fight weekend. Jerome Rivera steps in at 145 pounds. Interesting to see what Ode looks like when he does make that 125-pound debut in the UFC, but that is UFC Vegas number 18. Of course, we'll talk about UFC 258 here, come up here later on in the show, but Daniel, let's talk about the news that was made by Bellator on Tuesday that they are heading to Showtime. This is not really surprising news to me. This is something that you could see coming for months now. You know, the moment when Steven Espinoza, basically, he became the guy that Scott Coker was going to answer to, and this happened, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, it was very clear that, and even Steven Espinoza had done an interview back, you know, a while with a boxing publication where he basically said, you know, without saying it, Bellator is coming to Showtime. But, you know, some of the interesting notes that I got from the press release that Bellator sent out yesterday is the fact of this will be the exclusive home for Bellator live events. We'll be on Showtime on Friday nights. Of course, going to start with three consecutive weeks. So the first card being April the 2nd, then April the 9th, and then April the 16th. Then the following card after that will be on May the 7th, which is going to be headlined by Juan Archuleta defending the bantamweight title against Sergio Pettis. Of course, it's going to be the first part of this will be about the light heavyweight tournament. And I want to give kudos to Bellator for that. After the initial run of these three events, Showtime will televise up to two live Bellator events per month for the remainder of the year. And it also notes in the press release that all Bellator MMA events domestically and internationally will be available on Showtime in the United States. The prelims will be on the Bellator YouTube channel, also the Showtime Sports YouTube channel. Of course, the announcement of the light heavyweight tournament. And this is Daniel White. I got to give props to Scott Coker here. You could easily hope that Rumble Johnson, Yoel Romero would meet in the semifinals or maybe the finals. Or hell, just screw it. Just make it the first round matchup. And I love that Bellator did that. Bellator gave the fans the fight they wanted to see. They didn't try to say, hey, let's build up this fight in the semifinals or the finals. Let's do this thing right at the start of the tournament. And that is a tremendous move by Bellator. Kudos to Bellator for making that decision.
Yeah. It seems like that's something that Scott Coker likes to do. Like when you go back to the heavyweight Grand Prix, I think the fight that he made in the first round that was similar to that was Alistair Overeem versus Fabricio Werdum. I think at that time, those were two of the top heavyweights in that field. And Coker immediately made the fight. So that's a similar situation here. And look, man. Bellator was late to the party of 2021. They were. And I think you got to think this was a big reason why, is they were dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, and getting things started well on Showtime. So it was a slow start, but I'm so happy to see this announcement because it really gives Bellator much needed momentum. They really needed this because this was a promotion that was becoming more and more under the radar as every week would pass. Less and less people were talking about Bellator. And this move to Showtime is a perfect home for this promotion. This announcement gets people excited for the Grand Prix. And the idea that we're going to for sure have two Bellator events per month is something that I am down with. I hope the cards are great. And, you know, I think the world of this announcement. I really want to see Bellator succeed because I want to see that competition between Bellator and the UFC. And obviously it's not a legitimate competition in that the UFC is just very much in the driver's seat, but I very much like it when we have a very strong alternative. And for a while now, Bellator was worrying me, but this is a great announcement that makes me think the stock is going up. And, you know, I think this is a perfect home. I think the second that Bellator moved to Paramount on television it's clear that the Paramount Television Channel was not the right home for mixed martial arts combat, and now they finally found it. So we have this situation here. Obviously, when they go on national TV, they're going to make sure that there's plenty of security to make sure we don't have another Strike Force Nashville situation. You know, Scott Coker, I'm sure, is having a flashback to that, and he won't want that to happen again. But, you know, they're starting off strong, and really that whole side of the bracket is what I'm looking forward to. I think Rumble Romero is a banger of a fight, and, you know, if Nemkov is able to get past Phil Davis, that semifinal matchup is something that, honestly, out of all the potential fights, that's the fight I'm looking forward to the most. The potential fight of Nemkov versus the winner of Johnson or Romero. But it's such a good tournament. Nemkov's going to have his hands full going up against, you know, probably the best wrestler of the whole bracket in Phil Davis.
Yeah, you know, Scott Coker had mentioned the initial plan was for them to do a female 125-pound tournament, but based on the free agent signings they've had over the past couple of months, it was a no-brainer to go with this one. When you look at the names that are in this tournament, of course, the tournament's going to start on April the 9th with the first two quarterfinal matchups, and the second two quarterfinal matchups be on April the 16th. I saw something where Scott Coker noted there will be some alternate bouts they're going to announce. As well, of course, April 2nd, which will be the first event of the year, will kick off with Patricio Pitbull versus Emmanuel Sanchez. Scott Coker did say that they are targeting for the winner of that fight to take on AJ McKee in the finals of the Featherweight World Grand Prix in June. Also, you know, look, I don't know if you're like me, Daniel. I do not have Showtime, so I was very happy to see that as part of this launch of Bellator 2 Showtime, that Showtime is going to be offering new subscribers of the Showtime streaming service a free 30-day trial, and then a discounted monthly subscription fee of $4.99 a month for the next 6 months. And it notes in the press release that all you have to do to get the offer is just go to sho.com/BellatorMA. So that's awesome. I'm going to have to sign up for that when we get closer to April the 2nd. But, I mean, look, it's going to be great to have Bellator back. Obviously, they've got some big fights. It's still, I mean, like, you knew there was a reason why they were taking off, you know, 4 months, you know, from their last event. And they're going to come out with a banger here. And, you know, I would say I'm looking for that Archuleta and Pettis fight. You know, it was interesting. I did see the quote where Scott Coker was asked about why Gegard Mousasi is not in this tournament. And Gegard basically felt that just he didn't have enough weight on to, you know, compete with some of these big boys. But man, I'm looking forward to this Bellator light heavyweight tournament. Great to have Bellator back. Friday nights obviously makes all the sense in the world. And also, Espinosa did note it will be live whether you're on the East Coast or the West Coast.
Wow, that's awesome for the individuals on the Northwest or California. Jason, who's your preliminary pick in this field? Are you going to go with, I'm going to have to learn to pronounce his name, Dovitlan Yagshimiradov, or who are you going with among the eight guys? Who do you think will stand tall as the World Grand Prix champion?
Oh, give me Vadim Nemkov. To me, he's got to be the favorite.
Yeah, he's definitely, if we're power ranking the fighters, the champion's the top of the mountain. You know who my pick is? I'm going to go Ryan Bader, man, and I'll tell you why. I think he has the easiest path to the finals. It's going to be really hard once he gets there. If he takes out Nemkov in a rematch, and then I won't feel too confident. But I think Vadim, who's got to go past Phil Davis, plus the winner, Johnson Romero, it's a lot harder path than having to go past Machida and the winner of Anderson, Yagshimiradov. And so that's why my pick will be Ryan Bader.
You know who the biggest loser is in this tournament?
Who is it?
Every Bellator heavyweight.
Oh, yeah. They got to sit on the fence and wait for that heavyweight title opportunity, huh?
Yeah, it's no different than what we've seen with the lightweight title with Patricio Pitbull holding that belt. I mean, that's, like, to me, that's the one thing. And, you know, I did like when you look at the bracket. I mean, look, they're looking to run this tournament quickly. Now, look, we'll see, you know, in terms of fighters availability, how well that's going to work. But, yeah, that's the one thing. When I think of, you know, some of those belts or heavyweights, they got to be sitting there going, God damn it, man. You know, this title's going to be, I mean, literally, I mean, and Daniel, if you're right and Ryan Bader wins this tournament, the likelihood is the Bellator heavyweight title is not defended in 2021.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, it would be shocking if he was able to sneak in a title defense in December. I mean, I think let's say he wins in October. I would think that heavyweight championship fight's going to happen in February or January. I mean, we might see. We might see him vacate the title to be honest with you, if he continues to advance in the Grand Prix. I mean, I know Patricio Pitbull hasn't, but that's just a long time to go without having your heavyweight championship in a main event spot. I mean, it's something that almost calls for an interim tag, but you feel for the heavyweights, but you know, if the heavyweight division was littered with 8 viable contenders, we would be doing a heavyweight Grand Prix, not a light heavyweight Grand Prix.
No, you're spot on there. So we'll be talking about Bellator coming here as we get closer to those events. So we're about less than 2 months away from that Bellator of their first event in 2021. Now, before we get into UFC 258, do want to let you know that this episode of the MMA Report podcast is presented by DraftKings. Two of the sport's most respected fighters step back into the octagon this weekend to compete for the welterweight title. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the UFC, is giving you a shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering new players a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes.
If you haven't tried it yet, Fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick 6 fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about basketball and hockey, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs this weekend. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience.
Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code MMAREPORT to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the weekend. That's promo code MMAREPORT to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And just got the DraftKings app out right here on the phone. They got a lot of big contests there. They're big GPP that I'll have some entries in. And, you know, I will say this, if you are a newer DFS player, I recommend try to go in those single entries, go in those 3 entry max GPPs. That's where you can put yourself really in a great position, because when you get in those bigger GPPs, you are going up against the more, you know, professional type of DFS players that are, you know, spending thousands upon thousands of dollars. So be sure to download the app right now and use that promo code MMA Report. That lets them know that you heard about them here on the MMA Report podcast. And as always, appreciate all of our listeners who support the sponsors of this podcast. But of course, speaking of UFC 258, Daniel, that is what we're going to talk about now till for the remainder of the show, as we have got a great title fight, Daniel. No question about between Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns. But, you know, when you compare last month's pay-per-view to this month's pay-per-view, they're just not similar when it comes to a price point. And it's like, look, I want to see Usman and Burns, but, you know, the rest is fight card, Daniel. I mean, I'm not sure. And look, I don't want this to come off as I'm being a negative Nancy here. I'm just being honest. Like, I look at this fight card, I go, okay, if I'm forking over the $80, I'm forking over the $80 for one reason only, and that's Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns.
Oh yeah, bro, this main card sucks. Like, dude, seriously, Ricky Simon versus Brian Kelleher might be the second best fight of the entire card. That's not like hyperbole. Like, look, hey, yo, I'm hyped. I'm hyped to see Macy Barber return. I mean, Macy Barber seemed like on a clear cut path to be the women's champion, and she got knocked off that path after she suffered an injury but still fought through it against Roxanne Modafferi. You know, 1 year later, we get to see her return against one of the more exciting female flyweight fighters on the roster in Alexa Grasso, who's been a part of a couple, who's been a part of a fight night in the UFC and a fight night in Invicta. That's a good fight. You know, Kelvin Gastelum with his back against the cage, loss after loss after loss, looking to return to form with a win over Ian Heinisch. That's a fine fight. You know, Chris Gutierrez coming off, you know, not the performance he would have wanted. You know, maybe he's going to unleash those leg kicks, those calf kicks on Andre Yule. You know, Maki Pitolo and Julio Marquez are both exciting middleweights. But all in all, there's not a single fight on this pay-per-view main card that's not the main event that's got my got me hyped, bro. There's nothing there.
I think where the UFC dropped the ball in this pay-per-view is I think they should have had Corey Sandhagen and Frankie Edgar as a co-main event of this card. I mean, look, if you told me to make a pick for fight of the night and I'm not picking the main event, I would tell you my pick would be Maki Pitolo versus Julian Marquez. I think that fight has a potential of being a very fun fight. I mean, they're two guys that, you know, look, if one of them goes for a takedown, it's most likely because the other one got rocked. I mean, I think that's going to be a very fun fight. Of course, on the last episode of the podcast, I was joined by Julian Marquez. It'll be his first fight here in 31 months. I mean, look, I think there's some intriguing things I'm interested to kind of see. How does Macy Barber, you know, bounce back, you know, after that loss and against Alex Grosso? I mean, look, I think it's a fight that likely plays out on the feet. You know, Gaslam Hines, I think, is a good fight. You know, Jim Miller and Bobby Green, these are two OGs of the sport. You mentioned about Simone and Brian Kelleher. That's a great matchup. You know, the Andre Old Chris Gutierrez, the interesting one with that one is Chris Gutierrez has wanted this fight for over a year now. When Andre Uhl beat Chris Gutierrez's teammate, Jonathan Martinez, back there at the beginning of 2020, a very, close, controversial split decision there. I remember right after that fight, Chris Gutierrez told me, he's like, I want to fight Andre Uhl, you know? And so, this is a fight that I remember even talking to Andre last year. He said, yeah, man, I'll do that fight. You know, he goes, for whatever reason, it seems like all the Factory X guys now want to fight me because I beat their teammate. But, you know, that's a little bit of a storyline there. But, I mean, look, it's at the end of the day, if you're forking over the $80, it is for Usman and Burns. I mean, look, that is a high-level fight. It's a premium fight. Two guys that have trained together in the past. I mean, you would love to you know, talk to, you know, any of the fighters there at Hard Knocks that were a part of those, you know, sparring sessions of how did that go. The one thing that when I was looking at the tail of the tape on this one, Dale, that kind of did stick out to me is the fact of Kamaru Usman is, A, he's only 1 year older than Gilbert Burns. I think you would just naturally think that he was a little bit older, but the one thing that really sticks out to you on the tail of the tape is the fact that Kamaru Usman has a 5-inch reach advantage.
Wow. That's a big advantage that I didn't think. And that advantage is going to come to play because, like, when Usman fights, man, there's a big, big output. When it comes to his volume of strikes, he keeps his opponents busy, and he's got Burns out match there. And to get that match along with the ring is a big deal, especially when you consider that Usman's statistically the best wrestler at 170. I mean, the man never gets taken down, like ever, and he controls you. So, yeah, the age is interesting. The reason why I personally, you know, think of Burns as more of the older fighter, even though, you know, he's only older by a year, and I it's because even though he's new on the UFC scene, like he's been around since, you know, the mid 2010s. I mean, he's been the jiu-jitsu coach of Vitor Belfort for a very long time, so that's why I've seen his name, you know, for years. And whenever he made that transition to the UFC, I was thinking, damn, this guy's kind of old, and I was surprised. And he started off, you know, showcasing his grappling game, and I've just been so shocked and impressed by how well Gilbert Burns has done as a mixed martial artist. I mean, things really changed in 2017. And since then, he's literally only lost one fight to Dan Hooker. And he's beaten so many fighters. And of course, you know, the big story for Gilbert Burns is he was Mr. Pandemic to start the pandemic. Like, he was the one. I guess that's not a great nickname. You don't want to be called Mr. Pandemic. But when the pandemic started, he was the first guy who made the most of it. He impressed and dominated over Damian Maya. And what did he get? An opportunity to fight Tyron Woodley on ESPN. And what did he do? He beat him badly. It was a, wow, Tyron's done type performance out of Gilbert Burns. So, man, this is a banger of a fight. You know, to analyze what's going to happen here, Jason. I think if this goes the distance, Kamaru's your champion. Still, I think if this fight is finished, Burns, who possesses really dangerous knockout power, along with the best grappling resume at 170 this side of Damian Maia. You know, him and Maia are the two top guys on the ground. I think Burns has the fight ending ability.
Yeah, I mean, it's you when you talk about 2020 and Gilbert Burns was on his way to potentially being the fighter of the year if he would have been able to make it to that fight there in July. I mean, just, you know, you look at what he did to Damian Maia and then just how one side of a beatdown that was against Woodley. I mean, I think the question, you know, really is if this fight does go to the ground, and you do kind of wonder, and this is where I think the sparring sessions become very intriguing, is if you're Kamaru Usman, you know, let's just hypothetically say that in sparring sessions, he took Gilbert Burns down, but Burns submitted him off his back. How much could that potentially creep in his mind? I'm not saying that happened. I'm just hypothetically throwing this out there. So I don't want anyone to think that like I'm reporting something. I'm just saying, hypothetically saying. So that's to me why this fight is just so interesting with the history of these two guys, because they were going to battle to make each other better in the training room.
Yeah, and you know, I would assume if you spar that many times, I would assume both guys tap each other out a plethora of times, even though Burns has that jiu-jitsu background. If you're training every day, things happen. So I think, you know, as a fighter, unless it's clear in the training room who's the better guy, you're always going to think you're better, even if you're dropping some rounds in sparring. But, you know, things have changed, and, you know, Kamaru, what I'm looking at is, what does the evolution of his striking look like as he continues to train under Trevor Whitman? I mean, Whitman, you know, he's always been so well respected, but that went a different level when you saw Justin Gaethje make a case to challenge for the 150-pound championship. And, you know, the Trevor Whitman genius theory would get some more steam if we see Usman come out and just blow out Burns on the feet. I think this fight plays out on the feet. It's simple, man. Burns' strength is on the ground. Burns' strength is also on the feet. But, like, again, he's kind of a jiu-jitsu, like, he's a jiu-jitsu baller, okay? Like that's where he pays, that's where he makes his rent money, on the ground. And he's been doing it his whole life. So if I'm Usman, I'm just not going there. I'm not going to give him that opportunity to slip on a submission and tap me out. I have that confidence in my hands, and I have the ability to keep it on the feet. So for Usman, I think he's going to keep it on the feet. Now, the concern may be, maybe Burns is going to be comfortable striking with Usman and comfortable unleashing leg kicks, whereas Kamaru is going to be the one who's, you know, a little more wanting to control and dictate where the fight plays out. So his mind's occupied by that, whereas Burns is just more free to do whatever he wants. So that's a thought here. I've gone back and forth on this fight, though, and the thing I stick on is that whenever Usman performs well, which has happened quite a few times now, he performs like a world beater. He performs like a guy who's going to hold on to that championship, and he's not giving it back.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing, and you've brought this point up in the past about Kamaru Usman, and it's primarily based on the words we've heard out of Kamaru Usman's mouth, especially when he appeared on Joe Rogan's podcast, as he just talked about his body, and you just kind of wonder, you know, what becomes a point that maybe, you know, he just can't get the peak performance out of his body just because of the wear and tear of amateur wrestling and now in. I mean, look, Kamaru Usman should win this fight. I think he should, but if you tell me Gilbert Burns wins this fight, I would not be surprised, and I actually have not even looked at the betting odds on this one. Let me pull up bestfightodds.com and see what they have in terms of this one, and kind of interesting, Kamaru Usman almost a 3-1 betting favorite.
That's shocking. When I think of this fight, when I was tossing and turning in bed last night thinking about who I was going to pick, I was going back and forth, man. You know, let's see. The odds on Fight Dime, so if you go to Best Fight Odds, tell me that Burns is plus 240, Usman's minus 280. I would put money on I had money to spend, I would put it on Burns, because when I think of how this fight's going to play out, I think this is a much closer contest. And I'm glad you mentioned the wear and tear Usman, because he's someone who I really believe one time he's going to come out to this cage and not perform well. And then it's going to be obvious why, and it's going to be because his body failed him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I my pick in the fight is Usman, but wouldn't surprise me. I would say, I mentioned about, Simone and Kelleher is a fight that does intrigue me. The other fight on the main card, and Simone and Kelleher is actually on the early prelims on ESPN Plus. Those early prelims will start 6:15 p.m. Eastern time. I guess, Dan, we should put this. As we do this show here on Wednesday morning, we have three early prelims. It's a Vegas card. We know just what happens. I guess we got to put that little disclaimer here on the podcast. We're recording this here. It's 8:30 a.m. here in Tampa on Wednesday morning, 7:30 down there in the Rio Grande where Daniel is at. But Gastelum and Heinisch is the other fight that really does intrigue me on this card, and more times than not, especially at 85, Gastelum's going to kind of be at a reach disadvantage, but it's not bad in this one. So, looking at UFCstats.com, which is the official stat keeper of the UFC, Ian Heinisch only has a 1-inch reach advantage in this one. This is a really interesting fight. Of course, For Kelvin Gastelum, he's lost three in a row. Of course, they're all against the top of this division and Adesanya, Till, and Hermanson. Ian Heinisch is coming off that win against Gerald Mearsharp. But, man, this is a really intriguing fight. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and we were talking about this fight. And they're like, hey, what do you think? Ian Heinisch has a good shot here? And I was like, oh, well, what's the betting odds on this one? -230 for Kelvin Gastelum. I'm surprised he's that big of a betting favorite. Am I blinded by just having good conversation with Ian Heinisch in the past that I think that this fight's a lot closer than the betting odds say?
Well, look, man, we haven't seen Gastelum win since 2018, right? Like the guy is Kelvin Gastelum in his entire career that he's beaten. Like, most of them are retired, right? Like, yeah. Let's look at the people he's beaten in his UFC run. Ready for this? Jacare, Bisping, Tim Kennedy, Johnny Hendricks, Nate Marquardt, Jake Ellenberger, Nico Musaki, Rick Story, Brian Melanson, Uriah Hall. I think we have like one or two guys who are still in the UFC.
Okay. I need the visual aspect. As you say that sticks out to me. So, all right. So obviously Uriah Hall is still in the UFC. Brian Melanson, no. Rick Story, no. Nico Muscoki, no. Jake Ellenberger, I believe, has retired.
Yeah, pretty sure he retired after his last fight.
Nate Marquardt is not in the UFC, right?
I don't think so. I feel like he had a really bad fight the last time we saw him fight.
Let's see. Let's look at old Nate's record here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He hasn't fought since 2017.
Yeah, 2017. He announces he retired in 2017. Daniel, you know this. You never believe that.
I know, but it's been 4 years.
Okay, so Johnny Hendricks, he's out of the game. Tim Kennedy's out of the game.
Bare knuckle guy.
Bisping's retired. Jacare is technically still in the UFC.
Yeah, but he's someone who you wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't have another UFC fight.
Yeah, he's lost four of his last five, and his only win is against Chris Wyden back there. That is a crazy stat on Gastelum, though. Great job pointing that one out there, bro.
Yeah, I'm putting money on Ian Heinisch. Let's go. I'm on the Heinisch train. Kelvin has not looked good. The thing is, Kelvin has had really good, losses, right? Like he fought Adesanya, and he looked damn good, right? He a split decision loss to Darren Till. So, look, in a losing fashion, Gastelum has looked all right. I mean, look, there's a lot of pressure on Kelvin because if he gets that fourth loss, that's tough stuff for a guy who, really felt like he was going to be part of the middleweight championship picture for a long time. And Heinisch also needs that win. So, I think it sucks because, the fight that was shaping up to be the second best fight on this main card was going to be Pedro Munhoz versus Jimmy Rivera. And it sucks that got scrapped. I'm pretty sure it was a COVID-19 test. I mean, I believe that's so, what yeah. That's what you got to assume when a fight gets scrapped, you know, early part of fight week. And you know, that's what I was looking forward to the second most on the main card. But because that one was scrapped, Barber Grasso is the one I'm looking forward to. You know, I love big time prospects, and Barber is one of those. Look, man, it's all about how she fights after adversity. She faces real adversity, and her first fight back is tougher than the fight she lost. I really think Grasso's a tougher fight than Modafari. And I think this lends itself to be an exciting fight when you look at the fight style of Grasso again. I think Alexa probably beats her, but if Barber beats Grasso, it's time to get back on the hype train. She's had a long time to recover, and I hope she performs well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, coming back from that knee injury, of how does she look? And it's a, I think stylistically, it's a good matchup for Macy. But I mean, look, we know what Alexa can do on her feet. I mentioned about Patola and Marquez. I think that should be a fun fight on the feet. Jim Miller is a guy that's gone, you know, through a late resurgence here, taking on Bobby Green. Vieira is another guy I think on the TV prelims to look forward to. Bilal Muhammad, I think he should get the win there. Against Diego Lima, Julian Robinson, Miranda Maverick is actually going to kick off the early prelims. That's a good fight there. But, I think if you're forking over I know for me after taxes, it's basically $80. I'm going to fork it over just for the main event because, we talk about this all the time, Daniel, of just kind of like, you know, we want pay-per-views to be great. And like, I feel like I'm getting a pay-per-view main event and the rest of it's a fight night card.
Yeah, I do too. And the thing is, it seemed like that was obviously going to happen because it was sandwiched between two really good pay-per-views, right? It's sandwiched between the McGregor fight. And after 258, we're going to have a pay-per-view where we have three championship fights. So It's something where when you're running a fight card every single week, if you have a pair of great pay-per-views, I guarantee you the one in between is going to be weak. And that's just the UFC. And again, this is not an event where you're going to invite your friends over. You can't feel confident that they're going to pay attention to any of the fights before the main event. And the main event itself isn't that like blockbuster draw, even though Kamaru and Burns is a great fight. For those that pay attention to the sport, it doesn't have that jazz. It doesn't have that fire that gets the casual people interested.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure I'll most likely on Saturday night be watching this pay-per-view, but man, it's tough when it's AEW, and we know what last month's pay-per-view, and you bring up what next month's pay-per-view is as well. But Usman Burns, it's a great fight. I mean, plain and simple, it's just a great fight. I think the fight's a lot closer than the betting odds do say in terms of this one. But it's always good to be there. Of course, by the way, also PFL did announce their more fighters. They announced their heavyweight and women's lightweight tournaments this week as well. I just remember I'm going to pull it up here. When I looked at the lightweight for the women, pretty much just looked like a lot of former UFC 35ers that are going up to 155 pounds. City Danos is in this one. Obviously, Kayla Harrison. Larissa Pacheco's in there as well. Obviously the heavyweight, the most notable names in there, Fabricio Werdum, and Justin Willis. Muhammad Usman, Kamaru's brother, is in this one. He was a guy that I know was trying to get into the UFC, but I just think the UFC probably wasn't as interested as maybe they thought. By the way, also, if you want to watch some MMA this weekend on Friday over on Fight Pass, you've got LFA and also Titan Fighting Championships. Speaking of Titan, I did talk to Olivier Mourad, who's fighting for the featherweight title, who most interesting kind of, he noted that interview, he actually turned down a contender series fight last year. He was unable to fight, and obviously it's, you know, as a fighter. And then I don't know if you saw this, Ashkar, who was supposed to take on Cody Stamann, unable to make it to fight week, was not deemed medically clear to fight last Saturday, got cut by the UFC.
Well, that lets you know that there's something going on there, that there's some malfeasance because the UFC does situations like that. If something that is done that they think he was in control of, that he should have taken care of and been professional. So that's the assumption. There's no details, right, about what happened?
No details at all. I would just tell you, it makes me wonder if it's something that maybe, I don't know, the pure speculation here. It makes me wonder if maybe the UFC thought that he knew he wasn't going to be medically deemed to compete. I don't know. But, yeah, not a good sign when the UFC brings you in short notice, you can't make it the fight night, and they say, yeah, nice knowing you. See you later.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would think. I mean, whenever you do them the favor, I think something happened there, and he has to blame himself. But you want to stay positive for people, and hopefully he gets his things in order, and he can get back and have that success that he wish he did.
And Paul, I mean, you feel bad for Cody Stamen. He goes through three opponents in terms of that one, and we'll see how, when he can get back in there. I mean, he mentioned to me last week when I talked to him, he didn't tell me names. He just said that, fighters on the UFC roster turned down a short notice fight against him, which, I mean, look, I don't necessarily blame those fighters. I mean, Cody's a tough matchup.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about why you shouldn't take that short notice fight when he talked to you, right? Yeah. So, it only makes sense for fighters not to take that fight. I mean, again, you're right. He's a tough fight. He's one of the tougher outs in that division. He continues to improve. And why would you want to take a short notice fight where you have a high probability of coming out as a loser and with less stock, less momentum associated to your name?
Yeah. It's, you hope that Cody's able to get in there. By the way, one last thing I'll mention here in the podcast. So I did not watch the bare knuckle event, but I think it was on Saturday. I saw this clip from Jedi Goodman posted of Sean Wheelock going, this sold out crowd here in Tampa, Florida is going crazy. I'm like, oh my God. And Sean's a buddy of mine. Me and Sean, we're good friends, know each other for a long time. I'm just going to say this. I haven't talked to Sean about this. I guarantee you that was a producer telling him in his ear to call Tampa, Florida, because I know this. Sean knows Lakeland is not Tampa. And Yeah,
I thought you were going to just make fun of him for calling it a sold out crowd. It's like man, running an event in the middle of a pandemic, most crowds are going to be sold out.
No, first off, how about, I didn't watch the fight, but then the girl who beat Paige VanZant, how the woman from the crowd just walks right into the ring and throws a bottle of water at her. Like, where is the security?
Yeah, it'd be one thing for that to happen in normal times, but for that to happen again in a pandemic. During the water bottle went through quarantine or a COVID test. That was very, if you're throwing your own water at someone, that's almost like an attack, Jason. And in this day and age, you're attacking them with your germs.
Yeah, man.
Go ahead.
No, I was just kind of like, I was like, what is the backstory here? This woman just walks right into the ring. No one stops her. Is David Feldman now trying to sign this girl now?
I know. He probably will, man. It felt like WWE. Shout out to Chris Leben, retiring after, fighting one last time. I mean, this dude was, what a roller coaster of a UFC career. I mean, he starts off as a guy who is, very much the bad guys of the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, he came across like a bully on that original season of Tough. And he went from that to become just a fan favorite due to his fight style. He's had some memorable fights. And I think his most memorable moment of his career, unfortunately, is probably losing to Anderson Silva. Yeah. That's probably his most memorable moment. But in terms of a positive, I think you got to look at Leben versus Sexy Yama at UFC 116. Was just a badass fight. And, Chris Leben had I wouldn't consider him a UFC Hall of Famer, but he definitely had a very remarkable career.
But I will tell you, Daniel, there was definitely a lot of buzz there. It seemed like a lot of buzz for Bare Knuckle, and we'll see if Chris Lieben truly does stay retired. We do know sometimes retirements in MMA, you necessarily cannot believe them. But that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, DraftKings. Just download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code MMA Report to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That's promo code MMA Report to get a shot of millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Also, be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube, where you do get access to all of our video content. It's up there. I will be posting the video interviews I did from the last edition of the podcast with Julian Marquez, Charles Rosa, Julian Arosa, and also Jared Vandara, as I had a chance to speak to all of those. So be sure to check that out. Of course, as always, appreciate you checking out the episodes of the MMA Report Podcast. I will be back on Sunday with the interview edition of the show. So be sure to give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Follow Daniel on Twitter at DanielGalvonDGG. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out twice a week on Wednesdays and Sundays on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.